3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. Who did the world of professional wrestling recruit as the ultimate heel? Forming the Dangerous Alliance and body slammed his way into immortality?
Yo, police!
When Atlas needed a break from holding up the world, who did the gods of Mount Olympus beckon?
Yo, police!
Now, this worldly ex-grappler has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank the gods he's only on the radio for an hour. Paul LaVoy.
His pronouns are he, him, and hungry. Really?
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It's a Monday, February 26th, 2024. And I know somebody who's more worldly than me. He's actually on the phone. And that would be District 3 County Supervisor Buster Johnson. Buster, how are you?
Just peachy and yourself?
Good. I don't, you know, I'm not an ex-grappler, and I'm pretty sure that you're not. But, you know, given that you've had some back issues or whatever, maybe you are. Maybe you used to wrestle. I don't know.
No, I never liked grabbing sweaty men.
Me neither. That's excellent. That was excellent. All right. So we have Buster on the phone. And then at the bottom of the hour, after the bottom of the hour break, we're going to go to a recorded interview, plus. Let's just say recorded interview plus. We got some music in there as well. And, actually, you would like this kind of music, Buster. It's old style bluegrass, Appalachian music. It's from, oh, the promoters of the Bluegrass on the Beach Festival that is this week. Actually, camping starts today. Music starts Friday, runs through Saturday and Sunday over at Windsor 4. We'll have Krista and Danny Stewart from Bluegrass on the Beach. It's Danny Stewart Productions, and we'll have a full interview. And I don't know, there's a whole bunch of award-winning bands that are coming, or bluegrass groups. I'm not sure if you call them bands, groups, or projects. I don't know. Anyway, we'll find all that out at the bottom of the hour when we start that interview with Krista and Danny from Danny Stewart Productions. But anyway, I want to get right to brass tacks with Buster Johnson, our District 3 County Supervisor here in Lake Havasu City. And we were talking before the show about this presidential preference election. I think there's some misconceptions out there that you're not really for it. It's not that you're not for it. I think it's provided by law across the state because it's the Arizona presidential primary, but there are certain parts of spending money that you weren't for, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's obviously the presidential preference, and for the Republicans, you have to be a Republican to vote. And we always get people that you know, complain because they can't vote, but they're not registered Republicans. They're not part of the party. You know, it's for the party to vote on who they want to represent them. And our recorder decided to send out thousands of notices to everybody that was a registered, you know, independent, party not designated, all those saying, hey, if you want to vote, just change your registration. I didn't feel that was correct. You know, if you're a Republican or a Democrat and want to, you know, do the way to pick your candidate, those people should do it. Not just somebody who doesn't want to be a part of the party or support the party. I don't think they should, you know, be able to change over. You know, because you have some states, and I don't know how prevalent it is, but you hear where, you know, say one party will say, hey, let's change our registration because we've got our guy and let's get a weaker candidate in from the other party.
You know, that brings up a really good point, though. Some states now are going to what's called the jungle primary, where Democrats run against Republicans, and that is that something that's possible in this type of election, in a presidential primary, or would that be something that, for statewide offices is more practical, or federal office? What do you think, Buster?
I don't like it at all. They do that in California, and so you can have, because what it is, like say, well, like our city council here in Lake Havasu or any of the other cities where you have to get you know, a certain percentage, and then they kick out, you know, the people on the bottom, and then they have the people on the top to run. Well, you could get all Republicans or all Democrats in the top. You wouldn't have any balance between the people running. So I like it better where they Republicans get to bring their best candidate forward or candidates forward, and the Democrats get to bring their best candidates forward.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with you there. I think when the calculation process gets too complicated for the voter to figure out, I mean, the voter is what's important here, right? When that calculation process is too complicated to figure out who gets in the top five or the top three or the top six, whatever, then maybe it's just time to not go to a jungle primary.
That would be my thought, too. You know, I think, you know, we've been using the two-party system, and sometimes it's three parties, but, you know, majority of two times it's two-party system, and I think that's worked out real well.
I got you. I want to go to this Utah lawsuit also. I thought the National Monument was pretty much a done deal, but now is it going to be tied up in court? What's Mojave County's role in all of this?
We're signing on with Utah was going to fight it for the monument up there. It was done in Utah because it took a bunch of their land also.
Uh-huh.
And so we're going to sign on with that and hopefully get the land they've taken from Arizona to be considered in that too. You know, we seem to lose every battle every time we go to court, but maybe we'll be able to do it. You know, there's, you know, Congress wants to do away with the Antiquities Act, and I agree that I have no problem saving George Washington's house or, you know, somebody's little where they were born or something is a national antiquity, but
sure,
when you're taking millions of acres, I don't think that's right at all, and taking it away from the public, you know, that just doesn't make sense to me, and I don't think that was what was intended when they started that.
So you're saying that the federal government is trying to tie the Antiquities Act into this acquisition?
Yeah, that's what they do. I mean, they did it with, you know, before, they did it, I don't remember what the, up in the northern part of our county, I don't remember what the land grab was called, but they took land up there, which locked away some of the cleanest coal in the United States.
Right.
You know, it was in Mojave County. You know, they just keep taking away the minerals and the products that we need, or the minerals that we need to make the products for everyday life, you know, to keep things, you know, inexpensive.
Well, not only that, but this is a pretty good income source for Mojave County when you think about all the uranium that they're locking up away from us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's billions of dollars of uranium up there. You know, we for some reason, I don't know why we have to be on the fighting end all the time. And you remember when they took the Planet Ranch water.
Right.
You know, they were taking the Bill Williams water over to Yavapai for Freeport MacMoran, and then we got into a lawsuit with Freeport and the government saying, hey, we don't want them taking the Planet Ranch water too, and we lost it. I mean, the court ruled that we had no right to argue over the water in Mojave County because we didn't have an interest in it because we didn't own the land.
Sure, sure. And then what about Coconino County? A lot of this acquisition encompasses land in Coconino County. Are they just waving the white flag and saying, yeah, go ahead, because it's a mostly Democratic county, or what?
Right. Their philosophy is just polar opposite of Mojave County's. You know, we're more of the individual rights, and we think people should be able to go out and do what they want to do, you know, as long as it's not hurting somebody else. And Coconino is more of a what's good for their area and for their Indian nations, and, you know, they like to see things locked up and not being able to be used. You know, they keep always pushing the old uranium mines polluted the land, and they're even saying now that, you know, if the uranium up here in this proposed area was to be mined, it would contaminate the Colorado River. It's been proven over and over again that there's no possible way that uranium gets to the Colorado River. It's just too far away. There's no natural water source to take it down there. But they just keep bringing it up. You know, the old tell a lie enough times and people believe it.
Right, right, right. Are there any other parties that might jump onto this lawsuit along with Mojave County and Utah? Is it the whole state of Utah, or are we talking about just Washington County and then north of St. George, of course?
I want to say it's the whole state of Utah. They're doing it together. I know the Arizona State Legislature is putting together a, you know, something to help fight it. You know, I don't know if it's too little too late, but, you know, at least they're getting in the fight now. And, you know, the more people we can get into that fight, it's kind of tough because all the federal land basically is on the, in the west part of the United States. So it's hard to convince, like when I deal with people from, you know, back east, they don't quite understand federal land, you know, because they don't have any, you know, or they have it so little that, you know, they don't understand. And we're saying they're taking millions of acres. They're taking more land than you have in your state. They just, it's hard for them to grasp that, you know, why that should be a problem for us.
Yeah, their idea of federal land in, say, Alexandria, Virginia, is the post office and the federal building, right?
Yeah.
Our idea of federal land is about, what, 75 to 80% of all the land in the state. So, yeah, that's a really, really good point. I want to go to break right now. We're going to take one a little bit early, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the TV district, what's happening on the south side of town for those people who want to get better reception with their antenna. And Horizon 6, Buster's got an update with that. And I thought Buster... Johnny Cash sounded good for this morning. How's that? Buster, are you still there?
Good.
Okay, good. Good. No Jim Russell today, by the way, because we had the recorded interview. I gave Jim the option, and he said, yeah, I'm going to sit this one out. He said, love you, mean it, Buster, but you didn't want to drive in from Crystal Beach. So there you go.
Yeah, I just long drive.
Especially for a guy his age.
That's
right. All right, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul LaVoy. Stay with us. Speak Out will continue. If you want to talk to Buster, you still can. He's on the other line, but you can call in at 928-854-KNTR, 928-854-5687. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. The taste of love is sweet. When hearts like ours meet.
I love that scene in the Blues Brothers, Buster, where they're at Bob's Country Bunker, and when nights get cold and lonely. Love it. All right, little Tammy Wynette on a Monday morning. Speak Out brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. Also, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford. By Patio Paradise. Also by Just Meats, all the cuts all the time, a locally owned and operated butcher shop in Lake Havasu City. By Salmon's Air Conditioning, serving the tri-state area for over 53 years. Ask about Salmon's superior maintenance plan. And by our newest sponsor, Blonzy's Steakhouse, 4501 London Bridge Road in Desert Hills, where steaks are just the beginning. They also feature the Prius, an all-veggie sandwich. And don't forget, we stream live, and our show archives are at KNTRtalk.com. And there you have it. All right, Buster Johnson's our guest. District 3 Mojave County Supervisor, and I think that's you on the Windows thing, is it not, Buster?
On the window? On what window?
I don't know. I'm hearing a tone like I don't know, you're signing on to something. I don't know.
Oh, no.
All right. Anyway, I want to talk about this South Side TV update. We have, of course, on the north side, there is already a TV transmitter for the Mojave County TV District. And now we're looking at Southside, but it's delayed a little bit from what I understand. Or there's an equipment problem, some kind of issue. What's going on?
Yeah, well, we went ahead with getting service to the Southside, you know, because you have the washes, so you get the signal coming up. And because of the weather that we've had. You know, we had some really bad weather last year, and the structure of the tower was not in good shape due to those weather events. So we made some repairs to stabilize the structure for the moment, but it was just basically a Band-Aid. So WECOM, they're the ones that do the repairs for us. They're currently assessing the tower to see if we need to do major repairs or just replace the whole thing, whichever is more cost effective. And we should have those back and to a board meeting sometime soon coming up, and then we'll move forward with getting the new tower and the hopefully coverage to everybody in the town then.
You know, there's argument out there from some people who, for whatever reason, don't have a TV antenna, and they prefer streaming or cable or satellite or whatever. What's the importance of having antenna TV? I have antenna TV. I actually watched the Super Bowl on antenna TV. The coverage is great. The signal is phenomenal. But why does the county keep this up? It's a very unique system from what I understand, too.
I think we're the only one in the United States.
Wow.
And they put it in, obviously, you know, I don't know, 50 years ago, whenever they put it in, because there was no television service in Mojave County. You know, people that have moved here now, you know, they think we're a metropolis, you know. Well, there used to be nobody in this county. Everything just passed over Mojave County. You know, even when they did, like, the nuclear test in Nevada,
right,
and they were giving people the money, you know, that got cancer from it, they didn't even include Mojave County because they just went over, just skipped over us because there were so few people. Same thing with electricity. You know, we complain about, you know, the power companies that come in here, but they were given a rate of return, you know, a guaranteed rate of return. I'd get 15% to even come up here because there just wasn't enough people to service in the area.
Right.
So the county went ahead and formed a television district that every parcel has to pay on, and then we bring in signals from Phoenix and Las Vegas, and then we rebroadcast them out to the public. And I think with the cost of everything going up, I've had more people come to me and say that they've actually gotten rid of their cable service because, as we all know, cable service is getting more and more expensive because we have so much, you know, quality broadcasting on the television network. I mean, it's one thing if you talk to people, they know about the TV district. You know, they might not know about a lot of other things the county does, but they understand the TV district and the importance of it.
Boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot of quality programming there, and you could, if you don't need your ESPN or you don't need the TNT or that for sports streaming and that, yeah, it makes a very good alternative. You can even watch the Suns now on Channel 3. You know, every Suns game that's broadcast is right there on News Channel 3. So, what's the timeline? When do you think that will actually be fixed?
I'm thinking we should have it. We should be brought back to the board in the next couple of months, hopefully within the next month. And then once it starts the construction, it won't take long after that.
Oh.
You know, depending on making sure that everything is there that we need to make the improvements with.
Okay, now, I know the county is facing some perceived financial difficulties, but what's happening with Horizon 6 right now with that water district that was being fixed, the hydrant situation, all that?
Well, I used that ARPA money, American Rescue Plan money.
Uh-huh.
I used $2.7 million of that to upgrade it, and then I've got another $300,000 I have to put in because everything keeps coming back higher and higher. So we'll be a little over $3 million, and hopefully that'll, you know, help them out, you know, to get the new lines in with the better water supply, and then we'll see from there if they have the flow they need to maybe make a deal with Havasu to come back and provide fire protection.
Right, right. Are any supply chain issues?
No, it just seems that, you know, like everybody else, every time you go out for a bid, it's coming in so much higher, you know, because everybody's raising the prices of everything.
Right, right. Didn't count on Bidenomics when this project first started, I take it.
Well, it's gone crazy, you know. I mean, you don't have to tell anybody. It's kind of like when they talk about you know, affordable housing.
All right.
How much is it that the laborers are making? You know, they haven't raised their prices, you know, threefold, but the cost of just the building equipment or the building supplies has gone so high.
Yeah, I make,
you know, it's kind of hard to build affordable housing.
I make a motion that we call affordable housing an oxymoron.
I think you'd be calling that correct.
All right. Buster, always good to talk to you. And anything else you need to talk about to tell the constituents?
I think that's it.
All right. Perfect.
All
right. I'll talk to you next month. And have a great day. Drive safe up there to Kingman, all right?
Okie doke. Bye.
All right. Thanks. All right. A little Pride of Country Music. Charlie Pride. We're going to come back and we're going to talk with, actually, it's a recorded interview. Krista and Danny Stewart from Bluegrass on the Beach. They're the promoters with Danny Stewart Productions. And I'll be back with more in a moment. They're going to tell you all about this event. Camping starts today. Music starts on Friday. And we'll get into the whole A to Z when we come back on Speak Out. I'm Paul Lavoie.
Well, people may try to guess the secret of a happiness, but some of them never learn it's a simple thing. The secret I'm speaking of.
It's an event that's happened, well, quite a few years now, the 21st annual Bluegrass on the Beach Festival here in Lake Havasu City. And everything gets underway this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday as far as music goes. And we're with Danny Stewart Productions, the heart of Danny Stewart Productions. We're with Krista and Danny Stewart. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For having us.
Everything happens this week. In fact, it starts today, technically, right?
Absolutely. Our gates open 9 a.m., so come on down.
Okay, we're talking about bluegrass music. And when did all this start with Danny Stewart Productions, Danny?
Where it really started was about 45 years ago. I started playing mandolin when I was 13 years old. And just got hooked on the bluegrass then, and then. But our first show was 17 years ago. We do a bluegrass festival in Pennsylvania called the NEPA Bluegrass Festival. NEPA. It stands for Northeast PA.
Okay, and that's your roots, right?
Yeah, that was the first festival we did, and it just, I mean, they came from all over. You wonder if they're going to come, and then all of a sudden they start coming, and then you get scared because you, where are you going to park them, you know?
Let's talk about the roots of bluegrass. We're talking about Appalachian country, correct?
Yes.
This is pure American music.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, bluegrass, they say bluegrass really officially started in 1946 when Bill Monroe hired Earl Scruggs in the band. Earl Scruggs was the three-finger banjo role. You know, you probably heard of Earl Scruggs.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was
from
the
Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, he was the man. He was the man that brought three-finger role to bluegrass on the banjo. And basically, back then, even though Bill Monroe started in the 30s, with Bill and Charlie Monroe, but basically, and I still consider, since I'm a mandolin player, bluegrass started in the 30s. But most people say it didn't officially start to the 40s because it was called Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys. It was actually country music back then. And it wasn't labeled bluegrass till like the 50s. They actually named the whole style of music after this guy's band, Bill Monroe. He was the father of bluegrass music.
So we'll talk about this festival in Havasu a little bit later on. I want to get to the festivals that you do more than just this festival. It's not like you live, eat, and breathe the Bluegrass on the Beach festival. You told me seven.
Yes.
Seven shows, and five of those are festivals.
Yes, exactly right.
Walk me through those. Which ones are they?
Okay, well, the first one, like we said, we started off with was the NEPA Bluegrass Festival.
Northeast PA.
Northeast PA, and it's for 17 years coming up now. And then we end up, we do a festival in, like you said, as you know, Lake Havasu, this one out here. We picked this up 5 years ago, basically. But this is the first one we didn't invent on our own. We purchased off the existing promoter.
Right, Larry was a bit, what was his last
Larry
name?
Baker.
Larry Baker.
Larry and Sandra Baker.
He's like a legend
people.
In this town, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's awesome. Awesome guy. Wealth of knowledge. He, in my eyes, he's always been the best promoter on the West Coast.
And interesting.
He used to have about five or six festivals out here himself. This was his first baby, and this was his last baby after he started retiring.
So he's well known in the business, obviously.
Oh yeah, he well respected.
Sounds like
well,
you are too. Well, so what are your other festivals after Havasu?
Oh yeah, so my other festivals are we do two festivals in Donellan, Florida, where we live. And it's called the Withlacoochee Bluegrass Festival.
Nice.
Right on the Withlacoochee River.
Okay.
And it's been going on since the 80s, but I picked it up about 3 years ago, and it was shut down for a while. And it's right there on the Withlacoochee River. It's beautiful. I mean, you got...
What part of Florida is that?
That's like central Florida.
Oh, okay.
It's right near, not too far from Ocala.
Okay.
Okay. And then I'm also a partner with Little Roy and Lizzie Festival in Lincolnton, Georgia. And that's in May, and we basically Little Roy and Lizzie is Little Roy was he's a living legend. He used to be from the Lewis family. He was actually in the Southern Gospel Hall of Fame.
Okay,
the Lewis family. He used to play with his sisters back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
Is he still active?
Yeah, he's like 82 years old. He's actually going to be here, as a matter of fact.
Oh, no kidding!
This is his second time he was here. Yeah, they're all good friends of mine, but I watched Little Roy when I was a little kid.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, very entertaining.
Right, and then you have another festival, correct?
Yes, we have another festival. Which one am I missing here, Krista?
Well, we're doing the themed cruises. That started about 13 years ago, I guess. We decided themed cruises, not a better combination.
Cruises on the ocean.
On the
cruises
ocean.
Cruises in the Gulf.
Yeah, so we do bluegrass cruises. We do one out of Florida every year, and we usually leave Port Canaveral. We go to Nassau. I keep the price cheap for everyone. It's usually $5.99 plus tax.
Bluegrass in the Bahamas. There's a mind.
Yeah, oh, it's awesome.
Wow.
It is awesome. That's our 13th year doing that now.
Wow.
And then we were up to two a year. Uh-huh. We would do one on the West Coast, too, out in California. We were doing Long Beach before COVID came to town.
Okay.
But then we're also going to Baltimore in June. We're going to leave. The first time we're going to go to Bermuda.
Bermuda. Mm-hmm.
And then also, next year we're going to go to Alaska. We went to Alaska 5 years ago out of Seattle.
Okay.
And that's actually blowing up on me. It's getting real big. My phone's ringing off the hook.
Yeah,
for that
I know a lot of people, and I've never been to a bluegrass festival. I confess, I'm that guy. I've never seen Star Wars either, but I've never been to a bluegrass festival. But a lot of people I know that go, it's a bug. They catch the bug.
Yeah, you got it.
How does that work?
Well, in reality, you want to say something, Chris? I don't want to hug up the time.
I think that one of the things about attending a bluegrass festival, the genre of the music is such. They're hobbyists. The customers that attend are also pickers. They also play instruments. So when you're at a bluegrass festival, it's fellowship. It's almost like your second family. A lot of bluegrass people will go to festival to festival. You'll know people as you go along. But Danny and I found that coming from the East Coast and then coming out to the West Coast, it's really the same group of people. I mean, it just might just be a different state or a different place that we are. I think, like, if you attend a country concert or a jazz concert or even, you know, any type of music, you're going to go to the concert, you're going to attend it, you're probably going to grab music or, you know, CD or something from the band. But bluegrass is, you actually bring your instruments. So there's so much picking and fellowship. And after the shows are done on the stage, everybody goes back to their campsites.
Exactly what I was going to talk about.
Yeah,
Larry Baker always said, the real show is off the stage.
It is. It is.
That's really interesting. So, all right, let's get to the bands themselves then, folks. You can follow along at the website, bluegrassonthebeach.com. And as we mentioned, Little Roy and Lizzie's show will be here. But who is the headliner? Who do you consider the headliner in this event, in Bluegrass on the Beach?
Okay, yeah, I would say that we have two headliners this year. The first one is Danny Paisley and the Southern Grass.
What crosses your mind?
Danny, I'll tell you what, I'm lucky enough to call most of these bands that are coming my friends, because like I said, I've been in the industry here for probably 45 years.
Okay.
And Danny was actually, he won Male Vocalist of the Year for the IBMA, International Bluegrass Music Association. He's won Male Vocalist of the Year two times so far, back in 2016 and I think in 2022 he won Male Vocalist of the Year.
Who's your other?
And the next one is the Becky Bower Band.
To that mountain, and brother, I believe God above can move it, but he might want to move me.
Becky, she's from Nashville. She's won Fiddle Player of the Year, Songwriter of the Year. She's won a lot of awards. And then travels with her is the Ned Borecki, I think his last
name. He's a banjo player.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a banjo player, yeah. And he actually he was an MC for XM Radio or Sirius Radio.
No kidding.
Yeah, he did all the bluegrass. If you turn on the bluegrass station, that's his voice.
And Becky Buller is a redhead, fellas. So if you're out there listening,
she's
a redhead. Fiddler.
She
looks really small. And
she's really tall.
Is she really?
She's really, really tall.
She doesn't look tall in the photo.
It must be
perception because she's in the back. So tell me about Kenny Ray Horton.
She left sometime Thursday morning. She's been gone a couple days.
Kenny Ray Horton, he's a great guy. He actually was the lead singer of the U.S. Navy band until he retired 2 years ago. And I'll tell you, after he retired, he's doing his own thing. He's a one-man show, goes around the country. And I'll tell you what a voice. The guys, if you listen to the U.S. Navy band Country Current for the last decade and a half, that was his voice. He was the voice of the U.S. Navy band.
So I love this name right here, Krista. Crying Uncle.
When I was in my 16th year, little Willie said to me, if I would run away with him, well, his darling wife I could be.
Crying Uncle. We've kind of grown up with these kids on the West Coast. Their parents are just absolutely amazing people. Young men.
Wait. They're kids?
They're kids.
I would have thought they were all uncles or something.
No, so Crying Uncle. So remember, you're playing the hand game and you're holding it back. Uncle.
Sure.
Little kids. That's how they came up with the name of the band. They are young gentlemen. I think the oldest one at this point might be 22. Might be.
Yeah.
The mandolin player, Teo,
he's
16. Yeah. I don't even know if he has a driver's license.
He was a monster when he was 11.
The kids just are absolutely amazing. They come from the California area, and they have just recently played the Grand Ole Opry. They've played Delfest, huge festivals out on the East Coast, and we're just so proud of them.
California area. That bluegrass is basically everywhere then. You could, I mean, if it's in California, it's in Illinois, it's in Washington State, it's in Maine, for example. So that's crazy. So, okay, tell me about the Valerie Smith Band.
Blame it on the bluegrass.
Yeah, Valerie Smith is another great band. She's basically, I used to watch her years ago, and then she came back about 3 years ago, came back into the scene, but 10, 15 years ago, she was on fire, and she's still back on fire again. She's got some great members in her band. She's got Tom Gray on the bass, who's a living legend in bluegrass. He was actually the original bass player for the Country Gentlemen back in the 60s and the 70s. And Valerie's she's a great songwriter, a great great band leader. I mean, she's got an awesome band right now.
And these aren't Fender P basses we're talking about. These are stand-up slap basses we're talking about,
yeah,
right?
These are doghouse basses.
Right. Sure.
Is anything amped up? Is anything connected to an amp in this business? Or, I mean, I know you mic instruments, obviously.
Yeah.
Because you're playing to a large audience.
Well, most of those doghouse basses will be still plugged into an amplifier.
A direct input.
But most of them, but sometimes you could just wrap a piece of foam around a microphone, put it by the tailpiece, and then put it in. I mean, our son plays bass. He's actually the bass player for the U.S. Navy band, Country Current, so we know
fantastic.
A little bit about basses.
Let's go to the next act I see on the flyer, the Kevin Prater Band.
Yeah, Kevin Prater Band is Kevin's another good friend of mine and just an awesome guy. He used to come out here and play out west for Larry Baker years ago when he was the tenor singer for the James King Band.
Oh.
James King was on fire. He passed away now about 4 or 5 years ago.
There's a lot of name recognition I'm getting in bluegrass. A lot of bands are named after the person, obviously.
Yeah. Basically. But Kevin, I'll tell you what, Kevin's just he's a great singer, good band leader, good mandolin player. I think he's playing banjo now because he hired a mandolin player. So a lot of these musicians also play different instruments.
So do these bands come in for one night, two nights, or does it just depend?
Most bands are two nights.
Okay.
Because, you know, the cost of getting them out here from the East Coast.
Sure.
You know, You know, like it's usually out on the East Coast. I usually hire a band one per day. It doesn't really make sense to hire more because you already got their name on the flyer and advertising. But out here, you got to get a second day at them because the cost is almost double to get them out here.
So, like Friday night, you'll have a headliner, and then pretty much the same bands as Saturday. Saturday night, you'll have a headliner with those bands.
Yes, correct.
That's mm-hmm. interesting. Good. All right, here's another name, Monroe Crossing.
Life is like a mountain railroad with an engineer that's brave. We must make the run.
All right, well, Monroe Crossing is, they're out of Minnesota. And these guys, I'll tell you what, they come on all my cruises. Every year they come on my Florida cruise, and they bring a lot of people. You'll never hear their name. You'll never hear them on Sirius Radio, because they basically market all their stuff, all their materials. They kind of fly below the radar.
Oh.
But the following that they have, they think they're the Beatles out in Minnesota.
They are.
And they want literally these other bands that are like bigger stars. They should look their way to see how what they're doing for marketing, because they're making a good living playing bluegrass music, which is pretty rare.
And they're cutting into the polka market when it comes to Minnesota, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, they play punk rock.
What?
They play all different types of genre.
Really?
They do. Yeah,
they actually do a thing called Bluegrass Mass.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they'll play Carnegie Hall. They'll go up to all these, and what they'll do is they'll play under a big conductor and all these singers. Well, and they actually back up the singers. It's a really big deal, Bluegrass Mass.
Wow, interesting.
It's not your normal.
So we talked about Little Roy earlier. Let's talk about the Little Roy and Lizzie show.
Oh, glory, hallelujah. I came running when he set me free. God's been good to me.
Little Roy and Lizzie, I'll tell you what, they're really good friends of mine. I will hire them on every show that I do. Little Roy's he's a living legend. He comes from the Lewis family. He used to be the six-year-old kid playing banjo in the
band. This is like the Carter family of bluegrass.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly, right.
That's
a good way of putting it.
Thank you.
They were the first band of Southern gospel.
Wow,
and if you Google the Lewis family, you'll see. I mean, like I said, they were just rock stars back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
They were actually bluegrass stars.
they were. Well, you know what? Back as a kid in Pennsylvania, you saw them all the time. You almost got sick of them. You know, just like Jimmy Martin and the Osborne Brothers.
Uh-huh.
You saw them all the time. Where now you look back at it and you say, boy, I really wish I could see them again. But a lot of those guys are all gone by now.
All right, so we're at about five to seven minutes left, and I want to touch on this last band, Lorraine Jordan and Carolina Road.
Yes, I heard my mother call my name in prayer. She was pouring out her heart to Jesus there.
Yeah, Lorraine's another good friend of mine. She's from North Carolina, and she has even her own coffee house down there called Lorraine's Coffee House. And I'll tell you, she always has a great band with her. She's a rock solid. She does a lot of mixed stuff. She'll do some country stuff too. She'll have like some big country stars come in and sit some sessions with her in on a lot of her shows too. So Lorraine's just a great person, great mandolin player, and a good singer. And like I said, she's always going to deliver a good show every time she comes out here.
So I almost missed it, but the East Tennessee State University Bluegrass Band.
So I'm going to brag up on ETSU Bluegrass. East Tennessee State University is in the hub of the corner of the northern eastern part of the state, and our son is an alumni from the university.
Oh, very cool.
This is, I think there are two in the nation, possibly three, universities and schools that actually you can major in bluegrass. And
what?
So, yes, they have a program there that you can actually major in bluegrass. And
wait, a bachelor's degree in bluegrass?
Yes, a bachelor's
degree
in bluegrass.
So it would be a bachelor's in music with emphasis on bluegrass.
Absolutely.
I got you.
Absolutely. Again, our son did attend. A lot of the folks that we're talking about that are attending and playing the festival this year did attend at the university. We've seen a lot of kids come up, even with our son's graduating class. Rhonda Vincent's daughters both went to the university. The program is super, super strong.
So this is a rotating band depending on what class you're in.
Yes. And some of the musicians that are playing at the festival too also are now instructors. So our son has been an instructor. Becky Buller is super big in that. Hunter Berry, who's the fiddle player for Little Roy and Lizzie show. John Gooding, the Gooding brothers. John Gooding attended ETSU as well. Right. Again, I think it's just such an interesting program to be able to have. Even if you like, our son mastered in communications and then minored in bluegrass, because I did tell the director at the time that I didn't want him living in my basement eating ramen noodles.
Nice.
He had to have
job. We're down about 4 minutes. I want to get to bluegrass on the beach and the camping arrangements. That it's a big thing when it comes to bluegrass, people staying on the site. Tell me how people can do that here in Havasu.
So people can still come. We do have dry camping that's available, and that's available. Again, the gates open today, February 26th. They open – our RV gates open every day at 9 o'clock.
This is at Windsor 4?
This is at Windsor 4 at the State Park, and tickets can be purchased online. For a weekend camping ticket at this time, it's $120, and they can go to bluegrassonthebeach.com and buy their tickets that way. We do also accept cash or check at the gate.
Nice.
We have a wonderful gate staff that's super happy and energetic to greet you and welcome you. And then we have a wonderful parking crew. Like you said, a lot of the bluegrassers, they will travel together. It'll be like a caravan. They'll all come together, want to camp together, pick together, fellowship.
Is this the whole site surrounds the stage, or is the stage in one part of the park, or how does that work? What are the views of the lake like, too?
Well, the stage is right there along the lake. So, I mean, when you come, you're watching the bands, and you're literally like on the grass area down in that park. That the state park here is just awesome, and there are awesome people to deal with too. I mean, you know, Dan Rodney is my point of contact, and I'll tell you what, he bends over backwards helping us out. I mean, everybody wants this to go on, and I'll tell you what, even the city of Lake Havasu here, we feel so welcome. Even when we walk around Main Street and hang posters, I'll ask them to hang if I can hang a poster in a window, and I get 100% of them to say yes.
Right, right.
I usually don't get that everywhere.
Oh, you don't?
No, because a lot of like small communities, they don't want you to go over there. They want you to stay and shopping at their store.
Right.
You know.
Well, this is the 21st annual, so 21 years of Bluegrass on the Beach. And again, the music starts Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but the camping starts?
As of today, February 26th.
Yeah, nice.
People can come in. And again, a lot of people, Havasu's a beautiful city. It's very welcoming. Our customers will, you know, enjoy the things you have here in the town, the bridge, the things you want to see here in Havasu. Another thing to mention, too, is we have really wonderful food and craft vendors on site. We do encourage you to support those. I take a lot of pride in who we hire. We have a really good diverse option for food and crafts. We also have instrumental instructional workshops on Friday and Saturday. We also have...
I would imagine there'd be people that would repair a mandolin for you or whatever instrument you have that could actually help you make adjustments or that sort of thing, help you with tuning.
Well, we don't really have that here. We have that at our Pennsylvania Festival. We have a Martin representative, Martin guitar representative.
Nice.
But we also do have a Humane Society here on Friday and Saturday. And they bring, and we have actually a dog section where you can come and you can bring your dog, but you have to sit in the dog area to watch the concert. And as long as that doesn't get out of hand, we're going to keep that going.
Right, right.
But I'll tell you what, we watch a lot of dogs get adopted at our Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah.
That's a big deal here in Havasu. A lot of people take their pets. But like we said, it's restricted to one area.
Yeah.
So can people get their passes online? I'll give out the website in a minute.
Yes, they can get their passes online. We encourage people to do that. It's an easier way. They can use their credit card. They can buy day passes. They can buy camping passes, weekend passes. We do have a walk-in gate, and we do also have an RV gate. Prices for Friday for a day pass are $25. Okay. Prices for Saturday are $30, and for Sunday are $25 for the day.
Thanks for being here. It's Krista and Danny Stewart from Danny Stewart Productions. Again, the website, bluegrassonthebeach.com, and you can get those camping passes for $120, right?
Correct.
Smoking deal for a whole week's worth of entertainment, fellowship, and bluegrass.
It's a great time.
That's camping and the music included.
Exactly.
Right, right by the lake. Lake Havasu, a beautiful setting for Bluegrass on the Beach. Thanks for being on Speak Out today.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been good to me. Sing it, boy. Got a testimony. Your redemption story.
All right, we'll be back with more on Speak Out in a moment. Again, it's bluegrassonthebeach.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Oh, glory, hallelujah.
right, there's a little more from the Little Roy and Lizzie show. Speaking of shows, coming up next after news and a short break at Speak Out 2.0, the new phone number, 234-343-1065, 234-343-1065, if you want to talk today to Sheriff Doug Schuster. All right, coming up next, Speak Out 2.0. I'm Paul Lavoie, living the dream in Lake Havasu City. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.